Is it on?
Yes.
Okay. So this is a meeting of the Main Gate District Design Review Committee. It's starting March 12th, 2014 at 5:35 p.m. And I will do roll call.
That'd be great.
Okay. Dean Cervelli, absent. Jim Chaffee.
Here.
Rick Gonzalez.
Here.
Jay McCollum, absent. Bob Smith.
Here.
Tom Warren, absent. Matt Williams.
Here.
Okay. We have a quorum. If you'd like, I'd like to just go over some, since it's been a while since we've last met, I prepared a little report for you there, but I was just going to briefly go over it so that we all kind of know what the rules of the Design Review Committee are, and we put that on the record. You have several things to consider. Item 2 having to do with Hub 1 and its signage, and Hub 2, the new project, which we're going to be looking at. And for the record, we can say that Tom Warren and Dean Cervelli have arrived. At,
they have arrived.
5:37. So, as we mentioned, the quorum of the Design Review Committee is the design professional, at least 12 members. If there is no quorum, the design professional can make a recommendation. The role of the design professional is that he will write a letter to the Planning Development Services Director on the decision of the Design Review Committee within 15 days of the decision. And he summarizes the issues and special conditions of the meeting. This meeting does not, you do not have to make a decision at this meeting. You can. It's structured so you can make a decision. But this could also work as a study session or a mixture of both. The Design Review Committee, its review, and this is, first of all, this project is 1023 North Tyndall Avenue, and that is located in the Tyndall sub-area of Area 1. And in Area 1, the Design Review Committee makes a decision versus makes a recommendation to the Planning and Development Services Director. So you can make a decision in this area. However, when you review a project, you're reviewing it for compliance with Section C-19 of the Main Gate District Development Document, that is its design standards. You can also make comments on other aspects of the project. In this particular Design Review Committee, all projects in Area 1, you make the final decision, and this is one of them, with this development document, and any special conditions or procedures in Area 1. In Area 1, there are two special procedures. One having to do with height, that allows a building on this particular subject property to be up to 84 feet and 6 stories. And I'm going to mention that this building, the proposed building is 85 feet. There is an allowance of 10 feet for non-livable area. So the livable area can't exceed 84 feet. But when they have coolers and other types of equipment, that the zoning code, the Unified Development Code, allows up to 10 feet of allowance for that. And they apparently are using at least 1 foot of allowance. They may ask in Area 1 for a special bulk reduction plan, which is mentioned in the development document of D-4.B. And they may be allowed, against the historic buildings to the west, to ask for the special bulk reduction. Approval requires a finding that historic buildings to the west were considered in the design. What that means is if you make a motion for approval and it includes a special bulk reduction, you'd have to mention that in the opinion of the committee, it is considering the buildings to the west in its design. In the end, if you would recommend or if you decide denial on this case, one way to obviously handle that is to ask for a continuance if they come back and resolve any issues. If it actually did end in a denial, the applicant has a right to appeal to the Board of Adjustment. Another item on this case, just for your information, there was a question about the definition of story. And part of their first story has at its northern end two levels of a dwelling that's part of their rental units. We looked at that, and we looked at the definition of story, and we came to the conclusion that it was still a story because it was still continuous. It did not break the 16-foot line. So we consider, even with that unit in there, that it is, for all intents and purposes, one story. So we made that interpretation. That's all I have, and I would turn it over to any questions you might have of what I just said, or we can go right into the presentation going into item two on the agenda. And what I forgot to say is, the design professional, unless you decide otherwise, is the acting chair of the committee. You can elect the chair, but it is policy. What we did the last few meetings is the design professional acting as the chair. So I would suggest that we continue in that way.
Anybody have a problem with that?
Nah, not at all.
It's all yours.
All right. Item two is the signage on the original building. I see it's up here on the board. Feel free to present what you're doing.
I'm actually going to be presenting the signage issues for phase one and explaining why exactly you're even looking at signage. Before we did that, we wanted to, with your indulgence, it's not on the agenda, but there were some questions that have come up related to the west facade for phase one, and we wanted to answer some questions and kind of talk to you about what's gone on with that facade as compared to what you all saw in front of you. So I'm going to turn that over if you're comfortable doing that.
I know we initially talked about putting it at the end.
We can do it at the end.
If everybody's okay with that, put it to the front.
Is this going to be the full discussion of this, or just some parts of it? Only because I'm not sure how much time I have, if it's going to run the meeting past.
So we weren't going to talk necessarily about, we can do this however you want. The way the agenda is set up right now is a discussion about the phase one signage, and then we're going to talk about the phase two architecture proposal and get feedback, and then we were going to talk about the answer any questions, which we assumed that's where that issue would come up. But we weren't sure if it was a burning issue for some people on the DRC were happy to put that up towards the front. So whatever you want to do.
It could take up quite a bit of time. I understand that.
I don't know what my time's going to be like, so I just want to make sure if we need to have a discussion about that, we could possibly facilitate something. I don't know when the team's leaving, if you want to try to do something individually or not, but I
you want to get through
how much time I'm going to have at the end. I'm going to depend on what this thing does toward the end.
Right. I'm told we'll do whatever, so I'm happy to just go ahead and deal with things.
I'm back here Monday and Tuesday of next week, and I'm here tomorrow morning, so if we don't get to it today, we can do it there. Today's only Wednesday, so Let's get through these things, and we'll see how the time is, and then we'll
make
other.
I would like to discuss it for sure.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure we get through what our agenda is.
Right, and okay. Might take up the whole time.
That's fine.
The garage closes at 9, so that can be on.
I'm out of here.
Okay, then I'm just going to start plowing through the signage then. Okay.
Carrie, should I turn those off up front just so this is a little brighter?
I'm sorry. A point of order, I am on the sign code advisory board. That's not my creative conflict.
No.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Actually, what it could do is, if I misspeak, you can correct me if I'm wrong. So I don't know how many of you have, first of all, thank you all for being here tonight. As Jim indicated, We set this up to be a study session instead of doing the informal meetings with the various DRC meeting members, which we did the last time, kind of before we had a presentation. we decided to handle it this way and do a study session with you all beforehand. We set this up when we thought all we'd be presenting was the architecture for phase two. There are some issues that have come up with the signage for phase one that I need to explain. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the sign code and the way it works, but the sign code, there's essentially three categories of signage for regulation and administration of signage. There's residential, non-residential, and then special districts, and you have to fall under one of those to figure out exactly how much signage and where your signage can be on a building. So residential includes multifamily, so if you have an only multifamily building, then you go with that regulation, and it caps the signage at 50 square feet total for any multifamily. Non-residential includes the general business district, and it permits 3 square feet of signage for every linear foot of street frontage for a building or a development. And then one of the special districts, and all of these special districts are mapped, one of them is the pedestrian district, for which actually Campus Acquisitions is in, because the pedestrian district is on both sides of Park Avenue as you go up. That also permits the 3 square feet per linear foot of street frontage. The problem that we, the challenge that we had with our phase one is it's not just multifamily, it's mixed use. And it ultimately will be in the urban overlay district, so it'll be U zoning. The sign code does not contemplate mixed use, nor does it contemplate the U zoning. So I sent off what I thought was a very innocent question, which was, where in the sign code do we fall? And it turns out we don't. And so what's going on now is an amendment through the city's process, and it's going to be set for a hearing, I think, March 20th at the Citizen Sign Code, to create for all of the Main Gate Overlay District, if you propose a mixed-use development in the Main Gate Overlay District, and you are going to propose anything more than 50 square feet of signage, so it goes with the lowest threshold, then the Development Review Committee reviews the sign package. And there aren't, right now, there aren't any proposed criteria for which you are to review the sign against. I think the discussion that we've been having with Mr. Mazzocco and with Glenn Moyer, who is a staff person administering the sign code, is it similar to the architectural review, and does it fit in? Is it being respectful of the, you know, of the adjacent neighbors and all of that? So what I'm going to do is walk you through. Okay, so this sign code amendment is going to the probably to the mayor and council in April. The other discussion that we had with staff was, we could present to you all in a study session today the sign package, feedback, thoughts, whatever. We can then, at the April meeting that we have scheduled, even if it's prior to the actual approved amendment, in anticipation of that amendment, get a vote and an approval, and then we'll move forward once the actual amendment is effective. And we will work with the adoptive ordinance of the amendment to make sure that all works. So that's a bunch of technical mumbo jumbo. Yeah.
The question, does Main Gate Square have any applicability here in terms of the signage requirements?
I think the pedestrian district, I didn't bring that map with me. I believe the pedestrian district in the sign code goes down the main gate.
Yes, but we fall under pedestrian district and commercial, but also we fall under the historic sign code, because Geronimo is historic, those other buildings are, and then the first 75 feet of the buildings facing University Boulevard on the north side from General Benz all the way through CVS are in the historic district, and the remaining 15 feet of those buildings to the north are out of the district. But we've always treated it like all of it's in the historic district.
What about the Marriott?
And the Marriott's not in. That's out. So what we did is we went through the sign board of adjustments and so on several times on that block, because the signage wouldn't just be adequate for retail, you know, use. Went through WUSAP first, then it always goes through the City County Historic Review Board, And then, you know, then we would go through the city after the two boards approved the signs. So who's having the historic review board have approved all those signs? And obviously, Jerome Otis.
And the other solution that we talked to city staff administering the sign code about was extending the pedestrian district to Tyndall, because that is becoming a pedestrian district. That is a potential solution, but it doesn't solve the problem of any other mixed-use development anywhere else in the main gate overlay. So the question was, you know, do we create a fix that is probably works and appropriate for really what's going to be our phase one, because our phase two is going to be multifamily only, so we know what sign code applies. So do we go that far and amend that for only really what's going to be one property? Or do we go with an amendment that actually fixes it for the entire main gate overlay district, and then we just have to go through this extra process, and since we figured we're in front of you for phase two design, we would just couple the two. So that's the thinking, as faulty as it might be. That's where we are. So as I said before, in a normal business district, in the general commercial, the amount of signage is 3 square feet per linear foot, 3 square feet of signage per linear foot of frontage. Pedestrian district is the same thing. Multifamily maxes it at 50 square feet. So to give you a little more of a background, our phase one for the hub, as you know, has street frontage on First, and it has street frontage on Tyndall. So on First, we have 192 linear feet of street frontage. On Tyndall, we have 173 linear feet. So on First, it would be, that cap would be, it's 576 square feet of signage. And then if you add in the Tyndall, when you multiply it by three, that's another 519 square feet. I know I'm throwing out a lot of numbers. So if Hub was in, if Hub 1 was in the pedestrian district or the general business district, the signage allowance for the building would be over 1,000 square feet of signage. It's 1,095. So what we are actually proposing in this sign package, and I'll run you through it right now, is just over 400 square feet of signage. And that's signage for the address, the hub sign over the entry to our lobby, all of the opportunities, potential opportunities for retail, and then the 180 square foot hub sign that we want to put on the north face of the building. No signage at all on the west face of the building. It's never been contemplated, won't be contemplated. So to walk you through, so this is the east elevation. So this is on First. This is on Tyndall.
That's on Tyndall.
Yeah, this is that the first slide? Okay, I thought the first slide. Sorry, guys.
In the packet, the south elevation is the first slide.
Yeah, right. That's what that's what I was, okay, thank you. When your outline is key to the order of the slides, it's a little cumbersome. Okay, so this is the south elevation. We're proposing the, you'll see the two retail spaces. This is actually our lobby. So this is the little hub sign that we want to be able to put over the door. And this is the retail space. What we're showing are the potential for, this is going to be a single retail user. We don't know if they're going to want to put their signage here or here. So we're proposing one of two opportunities. And then these are banners that go perpendicular. And the size of all of these, each of these opportunities are 21 square feet each. The two banners are 7.35 square feet. And the button right here is
13.4 square feet.
Thank you. 13.4 square feet. And then this is 8 square feet. That's just the address right there. By the way, when I gave you the 400 square foot total cap, that I didn't realize until I talked to Jeff yesterday that these were probably not going to be their own separate signs. So the 400 actually assumes that these, I counted these together.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. That's, it's going to be a long meeting if I keep this up.
You put both of them together?
So it's
379 instead of 400.
Yeah. Yes.
Did you want to go?
Will you go to the next elevation?
Okay.
The order that I had was the next one's the east elevation. There you go. So this is the same square footage of the number. And again, this is one retailer, which is why you're seeing the box around there. The two opportunities, the banners, they are again for the other two retailers and the address. Go ahead.
Next slide.
And then this is the 180 square foot hub. This is the north elevation. So just to give you some perspective, the face of this building is over 17,000 square feet. So 180 square foot sign up in the corner. I don't know that this is necessarily a good example, but I'm going to throw it out there. When you see, how many of you have seen the new Walmart signs, which are kind of smaller signs on their buildings, those are about 180 square feet, and they're on way less of a face of a building to be seen. So this is probably, I mean, we're clearly over 50 square feet in signage, in large part because we need to do the retailers. When I took a look at the pedestrian regulations in the sign code, a lot of what we're doing is in compliance with that, which is pedestrian-associated signage, making sure it's helpful for pedestrians, and you'd see all of our retail stuff is over a door. We obviously think this is a pretty reasonable sign package to bring in front of you. All of the specs on the signs are included in the packet as well. I'm not going to run through them because I don't know much about signage.
Not
so.
Lighting?
They're all front lit, they're not back lit.
Okay.
How tall are those letters?
I think it was 10 feet, 3 1/4 inches.
No, that's the level. I believe those are 8 feet tall.
8 feet.
And that's
8 by 20.
Those are
9 by 20.
That's not in the color.
What?
That sign.
Right.
So you are going to get a variance?
No, the way that they are, the way that the amendment is heading towards mayor and council is that if you are going to request anything more than 50 square feet, including signage that's not necessary, it's a wall sign. Wall signs are permitted in the code. So instead of having to go to the DRC, right. But instead of having to go to the DRC and the Sign Code Advisory and Appeals Board, which is where you go for a sign variance, the idea is the DRC takes a look at the signage proposal in relation to the building and the other things that have been approved and can then approve the sign package as well as the type of signage.
Oh,
without
so
having
we'll be able to bypass the scale board?
So instead, it's just a different process. I wouldn't call it bypassing. It's just a different process for this particular district and these particular signs.
What does the sign code that what would the sign code typically allow?
Typically, what we look at is stuff that's outside of it. So I'm more familiar with what doesn't and what the actual standards are.
Well, the sign code would permit a wall sign at 180 square feet if you can fit it within the cap of your signage.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure there's some limitations on the size of it.
Right, and this was a discussion that I had with Glenn Moyer because the sign code also does not contemplate high-rise buildings at all.
That's right. And we've looked at a lot of signage in that regard on the adjustment board for that very reason.
question back to the lighting. Wouldn't it be more subtle if it was lit from behind?
For this one in particular?
Yeah.
And where's the light coming from? Is it just shining down?
These are front lit LED lights, so they're plexiglass face, so that glows.
Okay.
So they're going to look like independent backlit lights.
That's correct. No, it's front lit. I mean, so that blue glows, that's what you see the glow from.
It's not a freestanding spotlight shining
onto No. That's all right. It's just a typical light source, LED light source. Okay.
Which LEDs aren't usually allowed either.
Is it?
If we can overrule that.
I do a lot of retail signage, and it used to be the outlet. Now the LED is really becoming quite prevalent in the work that we do with this type of front lit plexiglass.
But we do have a dark sky ordinance here, so I'm sure you know that.
Yeah. And this side there, we can modulate the light up for that idea. It's not going to be something that's just going to scream up there. It's going to be something that you do see, in the evening.
So you're not seeing the light of the LED. It's simply lighting up the color of
that. That's right.
You can see the blue on this.
Sometimes that white of an LED is...
Right, yeah.
It's kind of hairy.
It's not there at all.
That's a good distinction.
Yeah.
It's sort of a blue green color.
There's actually... So the detail is a bit helpful. It's just... So...
The area of square footage for that, it's just for the letters themselves. It's not the empty space in the letters.
It's the whole box, Matt. That's how you measure the size.
It's an actual box.
It's a space. Yeah.
If you took the actual letters,
so it does include some of the negative space.
Building,
yeah,
the letters.
Right. Yeah, it's just the whole box.
And that's a great question.
Well, that's a distinction.
Really, with the city, I think you can take just the letters and measure each letter. Submit that. So,
right. I mean, my guess is that would be 50 square feet, probably. It would be easily a quarter of it.
Yeah, I don't know, you talk to Glenn, but my suggestion is that's what everybody else does, pretty much. Instead of taking the box, you take the dimensions of each letter and what the space is, what each letter encompasses. So, go across the bottom of the H, you would count that. But it would be very different than square footage.
We wanted to present it to you in the most conservative
manner. That's fine.
And either way, it's going to be over 50 square feet.
Yeah.
But yes, the city's sign code, the way that jurisdictions do it differently, the city sign code does give you the ability to take it letter by letter. It's 180 square foot, we told you, is the box.
Those letters are 1 foot deep, and then LED is within that, and that there's a front face that glows. So LED essentially follows the shape of those within that little box that makes up those letters.
Could we talk about the big picture real quickly? The details here are sort of important. I don't want to come back to it. But in the big picture, it sounds like it's a strange kind of mix of coverage and not coverage, and there's nothing that really directly applies to interpret some of these issues. But I really like the concept of having sufficient and effective signage at the retail areas down below that clearly identify those retail areas, and that will help them to be successful as retail areas, because I believe that that's an integral part of what makes this place activated and successful, is that the pedestrians and the walkability, and that it doesn't want to be garish, doesn't want to be overdone, but you want to have successful lighting that makes these businesses work. And I think that the mixed-use aspect of this is really critical, because you have two very different kinds of things going on, and different kinds of demands and needs and desires for the retail part than you have for the multifamily housing part. And I'm kind of inclined, just in my own interpretation, to recognize those differences and to consider the fact that we want to have, at the pedestrian level, a real successful lighting scheme. Again, not overdone, but not also unnecessarily restrained by rules that may not apply to this kind of situation. And I think that the signage for the housing part, is a little different situation and can be considered. So that's just in contact. That's how I would be inclined to view the question.
Along that line, how are you contemplating, if I have a store here, and then obviously you'll have guidelines and tell me how the guidelines of the sign, let these light icon blade signs, but the signs that are perpendicular, I could agree
banners.
More with
banners.
That in this area are very effective. How are those? How are you going to tell me as a retailer that I should build it?
Well, the way we approach this is the sign that we propose that happens for the retailer is the same front lit LED lights. That's the type that we insist that they use.
That's the banner.
Well, so that's what the banners are. So those are the banner signs. So those are perpendicular to the wall.
Okay, what I call blade signs. Okay.
You know, what I call the sunhouse green because it's probably.
So this is what you see as you walk down the sidewalk and you're not looking at the building, you're walking straight down the sidewalk.
Yeah, I'll just slowly walk through the different sides. So this is the side at the residential entrance, mm-hmm. on the side. So that's 13 square feet. It's really very big.
It's the high street.
At first, yes. Uh-huh.
What's the high?
The you have your book, but you know, the top of the sign is up at like 13 feet, and it's I think it's 4 feet tall. Because it hangs down, so it's up about 9 feet. And that kind of hangs. It's mm-hmm. kind of an interesting subtle sign. And then we have the two address signs where only the letters are lit. The back that backdrop is essentially that box. That's a stainless steel element, and those project out from it, and just the letter holding glows. And then this is one that hangs down. There's two different types. This is a Tyndall. There's two of these on Tyndall at either end of the building, and these hang down from the software above. And this previous one is the one that's at the west end, First Street. So it's a little different. That one sets on a wall. And then when we get to the retail signs, so there's these blade signs that are perpendicular to the wall. So those are the things that really enliven the streetscape for retail. Those are the local things that you see as you're walking. So those are 7 square feet. Those are just under 5 feet high, foot and a half wide. They're standard banner size. You have them all over the place on University.
Right.
And then it's a little light here. You do have it in your package, but that's the sign letter, and that sets on a raceway. So that's a continuous raceway. That's kind of continuous. And then those letters are individual letters that attach to that, and that essentially wires those up. And again, that's a standard retail practice for doing that. And the size that we're proposing that we have for these is 14 feet by 1'6". Very, those are up 13 and a half, 14 feet high. We could have allowed them to be bigger, but we don't want them bigger. We want to allow the retailers to have some individual with the signage, but we don't want them to get awfully overly big. So if this is a retailer, they may prefer to have the sign there. So they were just saying you either do it there, or someone else may say, no, we really prefer to have it over the front door. So it would be one or the other. We think we would allow them to go.
It'd be great if you indicated that when they're gone. Just so
we do say
no one ever misinterprets what we're
and we can do that. That's fine. We say site type to the landlord has to provide final approval for this, so that's something we do.
There's nothing in your presentation that indicates what you told us, that that's either or. Right?
That's, we could do it. And that happens on a couple.
It'd be good for that to actually show up on the document.
Yeah. The interesting thing about that is that, we don't know exactly how the retail is going to be broken up yet. So, if you ended up, we ended up having 5 smaller ones. So in that case, we would put another door there and have both. But if it's one retailer, we're not saying that they can have both.
Didn't say that.
Yeah. No. Okay. We'll
do
that.
Each retailer gets one opportunity for signage.
There is one deviation for that would be at the corner. I think that corner retailer who will probably capture the whole corner should have the ability to have one on either street.
Right.
Okay. And there's 4 opportunities there, so we're saying he only gets 2 of the 4. Mm-hmm. And then that last thing, that's that upside. And as I was mentioning earlier, the depth of that box of those letters is 12 inches, and then the end is within those, and kind of just follows the shape of those letters. So that will glow with the solid light intensity. So that's all the
the signage that we're proposing.
So what I think might be helpful too for them next time is I can do a better job of figuring out what's, as far as sign type, what's allowed in the code and what's not, and I'll work with Glenn and Heather, city staff, on that so that we can do a better job of letting you know what's actually different than code. Glenn was going to try and come, but his wife had a baby yesterday. He's a little preoccupied at the moment. We don't need a decision. If there's more feedback, that's great. But I'll have some better information for you all on that.
Sounds good.
Does anybody have any, as you were pointing out, like a distinction between the retail, street level signage versus the big sign?
I think that there's a lot of ways to view that. My own personal take is that the nature of the retail signs wants to be different from the nature of the multifamily signs. I think that the retail signs, are for a different purpose. You're trying to pull people off the street. That's the last thing you want to do with a multifamily, residence hall here. And so I think that when you think about seeing this during the day, it's not going to be that, to me, it's not going to be that obvious necessarily. I think that at night when it's lit, there's going to be windows all lit up all around the whole side of the building. And so I think that this way of identifying the housing project, to me, makes sense as an approach, as long as we're not doing something that is clearly against what the sign code would say that everyone else has to do.
I think about that in the context of what a number of buildings in this whole district could end up looking like too, though. If we are looking at creating a template for one versus the other, and I'm in agreement,
and it's probably
separating, right? So looking at this as a possible template, is that the template that we're going to see on every other building? Do we have other signs of any magnitude we can compare to, even in Tucson, that
With the present Marriott Hotel,
So what is the size of that, do you think?
Because it's so long.
Maybe not quite as tall, but a lot longer.
Yeah, it's less square footage than this. And I think also, Matt, isn't the sign on campus acquisition vertical? It's a blade sign vertical. Remember correctly?
That's a good point to look at.
And I think that the idea is, and Chris, you know how many times who's that, over the years and stuff for signs. But I think it's really that you don't want every building looking the same. And I think you have to look at the whole neighborhood, like you said, in context. But I think, it's appropriate sometimes to have blade signs and not have what I call a flat sign sitting way up on the roof, to the roof, and it's fine. This building has it, maybe another sign has a blade sign, so you get some variation and you get some distinction in the architecture, so you get some interest. No different than stores don't have all the same.
You're talking about sort of like Johnny Rockets used to have came off the side of the building, wasn't one of the streetscape one, but
right.
It came off the side.
And I think campus acquisitions is vertical, off the corner of the building. But
I think it'd be helpful to have, again, we always talk about presenting the context for any design issue here, and I think viewing one building in isolation is difficult to make a really quality assessment of how that fits into the group and to the neighborhood. So I think it'd be great if you could come and show us some photos of what's being done in the immediate area neighborhood.
The adjustment board, we did look at several buildings down after that exact reason.
The drugstore wanted more signage.
Yeah.
So they came to the adjustment board for that.
So that would be helpful to us too, to see that.
So that would be a good streetscape to look at at university. Okay. We've looked at several there. And the ones that actually flag off the building are designated as architectural features, and that's how they all look.
Okay. I think that there's a dramatic difference between pedestrian-oriented signage that's trying to tell a person walking where to go to a certain thing or that something's there versus a building identification sign, which is generally aimed towards automobiles, drivers, and people from a distance who are, where the heck is Amaria, you know? And it's helpful to have some identifier that allows you to see something from a couple blocks away, as long as it's not, you know, obnoxious and overbearing. And so I think that there's a place for this genre of sign, but I do agree with you, Matt, that what we do here may end up being referred to later as a precedent, and so you know, we might want to talk about it. Does it make sense to make sure that we don't have one of these on every corner, or you know, is there a number of them that's appropriate for any given building? Is there, you know, are there any parameters that might be appropriate?
Because if you make the whole neighborhood monolithic, you lose all the interest.
You don't want them all to be the same, but you don't want everyone to be so different, looks like Las
Exactly.
Vegas either.
Yeah,
right. I recognize that, I mean, this is branding. I mean, this is mm-hmm. casting a brand, and it's, but, you know, to what degree is that, you know, at the expense of everything around it? So, yeah, just finding that in context with other examples, I think, would be very helpful.
Yeah.
Was this considered in the context of phase two, then not assuming it's going to get approved and become a reality, but you're going to have another hub, you know, coming out towards Speedway.
It would be, use the word branded differently mm-hmm. than this was on would be the same site, just, and we show something on it, but you know, that's the process that they would go through as far as developing their marketing.
But knowing you're going to be presenting it and wanting to go forward, it's going to be right in front of this elevation.
That's right.
So, when we look at this, just peek over the top of the proposed new one, or is it, you know, that's another bit of context, if you could. Yeah.
There's a view towards the south that shows. You know, we show an element, a signage element like that.
Yeah.
And this one would be up at the top of this building. And we did,
yeah, and that the signage that we show in phase two does not apply to
signage.
This would be,
does not.
Yeah, the idea would be yes. No. But there, we really are looking at this too ahead of this project.
So we like not to look at any one project
isolation. No, I wouldn't look at it.
And it'd be great to see what the campus.
Just with the size, a couple points I wanted to make is obviously there's a color hue with the hub sizes, the blue, these grayish colors. What we would like with the retail is really very much like inside the university, which we feel is successful, where there's a lot of variation in color and typeface. We let, you know, the retailers, we want them to express themselves in that. We're not going to try to impose that all the signs are white. We want them to, within reason, express their philosophy.
Right. Well, they'll also have brand to cast.
They'll still have to get permits. And
that's right.
The process.
Is this building going to be called the hub or different?
Hub two. Oh,
I'm not sure.
That's what I'm saying. They're branded.
According to this.
Think of this is all. Think of this is all.
It's going to be one way to go.
Yeah. And that's why I say that the signage that you're seeing in the architectural renderings for phase two have not been thought out at all. We don't know what that brand's going to be. We do know that we're subject to.
They just define that area. Rick, you gotta get control of your meeting. You have too many discussions.
Okay.
We do know that phase two is going to be subject to the 50 square foot cap for a multifamily, and if we're going to propose anything more than the 50 square feet, we will have to go to the sign code advisory and appeals board.
Yeah.
Because we are covered underneath that. So, I'm also hearing loud and clear what you want is context to the area, and to the extent that we can, in the next 30 days, have come to some conclusions on all that stuff with phase two, we like to be able to present that to you in some sort of
I think that's one of the huge opportunities and obligations of this whole process of looking at district, yes, to do everything in context.
All right, that doesn't sound like we're going to finish it right here. So if everybody's okay, we'll move on to the next item, which is the Hub 2 design presentation.
And by the way, I did not do the appropriate thing, which is introduce the team that's sitting here in front of you. I think you pretty much know everybody. Jeff Salisco with Antunovich Architects. Tom Harrington and Eric Frim are both with Core Campus. Tom has done a lot of the front work on the acquisition piece for phase two, which I'll give you a little bit of background on. And Eric is the construction guru. And as he said this earlier, just looks good. So he's here in front. Looks. Just kidding. This phase two that we're proposing is, as you all, I think you all know, this is a piece of property that's owned by the City of Tucson. Direct Services for Independence is currently a nonprofit operating on the property. They have been talking to us as well as people at the city about the concerns they have with the constituent that they serve, which is mainly physically handicapped. Being able to access the site with all of the construction, being able to really provide their services in a very much changing context. So Core Campus spent about a year with them and a couple of different site selectors taking a look at some alternative spaces for them to move. They have some very strict requirements. They need the terminus of like 8 bus routes because that's where their clients, their main point of transportation, and they also needed a building that was handicap accessible plus. They currently have a building that was really built for them. And finding the combination of those two was difficult is probably an understatement. I think there were over 100 sites that were looked at, and there was one. So we have worked with the city in negotiating a relocation of Direct, which we are doing, and a sale of the property to do phase two. That you'll actually, for any of you who spend a lot of time looking at mayor and council agendas, next Tuesday on the agenda is the actual transactional documents to be approved. But in anticipation of that, and it's a three-way negotiation with Direct and the city, we thought we would start the design review process. The transaction is not conditioned on us being successful through the design review process at all. So that's kind of what got us to today and phase two. And what I'm gonna do is, there's a couple other quick things. As you may all remember, as a part of our phase one, while it wasn't a condition of approval, you all asked us to work with both the West University Neighborhood Association on traffic mitigation for additional traffic in that neighborhood, which we are doing, and actually today came to some really good conclusions. And then we have also worked with, you asked us to focus in and work with Ms. Gray, who is the only owner-occupied, has lived there for over 40 years. We've done a lot of work with her over the last couple of years with the help of Luna, and particularly Chris, who Gans, who I know is here, in talking to her about a desire to move, a desire for mitigation, and after a lot of, I think, difficult decision-making on her part, she has decided she wants to remain in the house. And we are working with her on mitigation from both. It will end up being both from phase one and phase two. So we have continued to work through that process. Again, not as condition of phase one, but at the direction, and I wanted to report back. We also met with city staff and went through portions of this packet with city staff before we brought it to you, because that's the right thing to do. And that's where the question of the number of stories and the explanation of the first story being defined as that plane came up, and Jim explained that to you. I can answer any questions from my perspective if you want to ask them. The other issue that came up was related to the alley, the 15-foot alley in the back, and some of the discussion that's gone on. Our phase one is to the alley, is to the lot line, so it's a 15-foot alley there. And the question really came up from staff was, you know, do we need a wider alley? The main impetus was the fire inspector, and what we talked about was treating this building as a high-rise building, so that it has to be sprinkled appropriately for high-rise, which then allows Tyndall access to be sufficient and not needing to widen the alley. And there was also a discussion that because there's no opportunity at the corner of Tyndall where our building is to widen it at this point, it doesn't make sense to have a 15-foot alley that widens and then necks back down. So, you know, being okay with it being 15 feet. We are working with Kurt Lewitt and Marcos Esparza from CLA, the traffic engineers, to talk to us about the maneuvering. Jeff will walk you through. There's not anything going on in that alley area the way we've designed the building. You'll see a little loading area. It's because we're required to have that kind of a loading area, but all loading for students and everything else is going to take place in the parking garage. So it's there because it's required. It may be service vehicles that are back there, and then trash collection is in that alley. So Jeff will go through that, but I wanted to let you know that came up as a pretty extensive discussion with staff. And at that point, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff to walk you through the presentation.
So it's great to be back here with you again, looking at another wonderful project here in the Tucson. You see the books and you've been looking at it, and I think you see immediately what we are trying to do. And we really wanted to provide something that had an entirely different feel from what the first building did. Different materials, really a different approach to the way it's masked, the way the building is masked. We really wanted to have also a very modern building. We think it's absolutely appropriate for a student, you know, what would primarily be for student housing, to have something that's really fresh and vibrant and playful also. We thought that was very important, but at the same time, we wanted to be a building that felt appropriate and contextual in the neighborhood, felt not foreign to the building that we built, but not feel like it was just a second phase to that building. So we thought that was all very important. And really the materials that we proposed. Look, I'm going to back up for a second. The first part of this presentation has renderings on the exterior, so we'll talk about that. Then there's plans, we'll go through that. We have some photographs from areas of the neighborhood. We'll look, you know, at those elements. And then lastly, in there we also have some contextual photographs of some neighboring homes and buildings for contextual purposes. And then lastly, we did shadow studies that shows the impact. And we did the shadow studies in a way so that you can see the shadow studies created by phase one and then the overlap of how phase two works. So you can see which one provided, you know, which shadows. I thought that was very helpful. But you see in this rendering, we're proposing that there would be a lot of glass torques on this east face. And the sun, obviously, as it comes around, as it gets high in the sky, we have shielding that we provided. That would provide some of the shielding against these glassier areas. But again, being on the east face, the sun is, you know, as it gets high in the sky, we have these elements. We also have this 12-story building next door providing shading.
Could you do me a favor and start with a super big picture, very brief discussion of who is going to be in the building, what kind of purpose clientele, how is it different than phase one?
Thank you. Actually, Bob, that's a good point.
That would help me to put what you're describing in better context.
It's a smaller building. It has approximately 95 units compared to the next door where there's 165. Corey keeps talking about this as a boutique, sort of project or product, so it's because its size is different, it is probably going to price a little higher. We've been looking at two-story type units, so there's a different sort of product and unit type that's in here, but I think they're seeing it as something of an even more exclusive property and project than the first phase. And that's part of, you know, the idea with really the expression of the building, this vibrant expression of the building.
Strictly student.
Well, I don't think by law you could sell strictly to students, but it's marketed to students.
It's marketed.
Yes.
But two-story units.
We're looking at that. We think that those are feasible. Yeah, we've developed a plan that will work in the building with those. Yeah.
But you do have three townhouses, right?
And those are two levels also. But we're looking at along the sides of the building where, like, right there would potentially be one unit. So they're obviously narrower, but they're two levels, and there's a certain kind of character about that we feel that a lot of people would really like.
So did this? So this is a kind of makes sense, I guess. The difference in your target market here, the students, but higher price, more maybe luxurious, exclusive stuff. Has that parlayed into some different approaches in your basic design? Do you have higher floor heights? Do you have more glass? Is there, so how does that philosophically turn into a different project?
Well, the floor-to-floor heights are similar. They're already pretty high. There's 9 foot, ceiling heights within the units. We can't go higher because we're bumping up against the allowable ceiling height. But I think that the amenities get bumped up even more. The finishes within the units are even higher. And they're very nice on the present product, but they would be, even more special.
Okay.
Yeah. So that is. I mean, that's a great question, and I think that helps kind of understand.
No, it helps me. Yeah. And one more. Is there any effort or intent of pulling any lines or expressions or anything from the first phase to the second one, or are you viewing it as a cut here?
It's really a different thing. From a design standpoint, is a break. The colors, although they're different, they're still warm tones, and we feel like those are really right, the great colors for here. We feel that when we see the first building, I feel like it very much feels.
So there's some color combo.
Yeah, there's color continuity, but it will be different colors, different, very, very different materials. Where we have brick along the base of the building here, and we have stucco along here. We won't have any brick in this building, and we really are thinking. Let me go to the next slide. A lot of contrast between the materials. I'm going to show one more look at just a single shot.
Do you differentiate your marketing to undergrads versus grad students?
I would defer to the title of it.
To some extent, the unit type does that.
Like your marketing and the product you're marketing.
Ranking efficiency, for instance, is made if you have a grad student. Grad students, you pick up the one measure, one better.
Okay.
The townhouses, are those geared to, in the same, are they marketed similarly? Are you separating those out? Are those going to be for parents? Are those like a visiting element?
They would be marketed the same way. The only real difference about those is that they have their own separate entries, a little courtyard in the front. So that's an amenity. That's a neat amenity at the street. Certain people we feel would be really drawn to that. Those are probably 4 or 5 bedroom units. So. But otherwise, it gives you a little more autonomy to not have to walk through the residential entry and, through that sort of a thing. So those are a little bit different in that way.
Have you done this kind of project anywhere else?
With two-story above?
Yeah.
Okay.
We can look at an example.
The project that's been finished recently at Old Miss is a lot like this. The scale's different. Yeah.
Do you know the name of it?
So another
kind of philosophical question. Can you, appears that there's a different handling of the streetscape without the retail and the like. And can you talk about why that is?
Actually, that's That's not the case. The streetscape would be exactly the same.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It would the continuity of the sidewalk paving, of the exact same sort of planters, same plant material, same benches. Because those elements are they work at either of those locations.
Great.
And so I think that's been very important, I think, with the city, is that we create continuity along the sidewalk. We've really worked together with campus acquisitions of the city to we've changed, for instance, our street trees over here to be the same street trees as are used over here, and we have compatible paving materials and things. So yes, it's exactly the same.
How about the ground level use? There were reasons why we all were interested in retail on the ground level before. What's your philosophy?
We feel away from the corner, it's just not going to do well.
What effects the townhouses do we think? We look at this in other of our projects where apartments are pretty good retail and the corner environment, the worst thing we have is vacant. Mm-hmm. Vacant retail, but the townhouse is actually kind of lively in the street in a different way, but it's kind of just a
Tom, from your experience, does that ring true to you? It might be too far to retail all the way down here?
Yeah, I remember this is way early on in the main gate. It fell in from New York, a major company, and looked at all these different locations and so on. And I always quote him and said, yep, it's a great location. It's about a block and a half away, or a half a block away from success.
Well, across the street, they don't have retail either. They came probably
right.
to the exact
well,
same
the point. Is, yeah, well taken. Tom mentioned that. I think you always want to build 1 foot to less.
Yeah,
too
right.
So that you have people waiting. Yeah, that's a,
good to understand.
Yeah.
But I will say that was part of the reason that I think the city pulled campus acquisition and core campus together to talk about a consistent pedestrian experience, so that while there isn't retail that down there, that we have consistent streetscape with trees and treatment and street furniture and other things that gives it that consistent feel without it feeling retail and then all of a sudden dropping off.
Next retail will be to the north, on Speedway. Yeah.
Thanks.
Looking back with this view, we really wanted to have a lot of contrast with materials and create a whole different feel. So at the base of the building, this is a cast-in-place concrete, but a toned concrete.
And what concrete? I'm sorry.
Cast-in-place. So you see something where you see the floor joints.
Tone.
But it would be toned, so it's a warmer tone than the grayish that you see. But you'll see all the kind of characteristics of that. But that's then contrasted against corrugated metal siding, kind of like a serpentine sort of siding element. That's an element we put a darker color. That's in a lighter color.
Those are both corrugated?
Yeah, those are both corrugated, but just in different colors, right?
And it's, so is it painted then?
It's, probably some of it is like an anodized product, but more than likely, if we're able to get something that works as an anodized, that would be this color, which is how you see that. This one is a painted product. Yeah.
But one of the problems is the oil canning effect on some of the existing buildings. You're going to get enough.
I don't think this will do it, Rick, because it's inherently stiff. The shape of it doesn't allow it. I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's right across the street, and it's a problem, yeah. But the corrugated, because of that shape, it's inherently stiff.
Is there a way to make sure that that's not affecting that? Because that does, it looks like, really crappy aluminum siding.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so it's, because this has depth to it, so that's just, the depth is what gives it the rigidity and the stiffness. It's a whole different, it's an entirely different product. That's the problem with that product across the street is that it's flat.
Right.
And that's why it oil cans. And I know exactly what you're talking about. It's a problem. Or it doesn't look good. It probably will hold up forever, but that oil canning is a negative of that. Also, these would be cementitious panels, painted panels. So it's that balconies would be kind of a woven wire mesh, again, different from the glass that we have next door. It probably kind of a silverish color, but there's a real stark contrast between, the warm natural materials and these more machine materials, and that's very, very much intentional to create that contrast, to create a really lively building. And we've kind of played around with these balconies headed back and forth, that Eric and his team really pushed us to create a character that had a playful feel on the building. And the other thing is we're required to have setback requirements as part of the zoning requirements, and I think it's 25, at least 12 feet back, we far exceed that. But also, the other difference between this building is that it's much more, there's much more variation in the massing than there is on this building, which is a little bit flatter across the front. Again, that creates a nice contrast, an entirely different feel between the two buildings, and we feel that that was, you know, very important, that this, the way this articulates back and forth and in and out, it really creates a lot of it, just that it's, frankly, it's a zoning requirement to a certain extent.
I like the interest of the articulation. I remember we talked before about balconies and safety and issues that occurred in the past. And so as one of the things we were attempting to do is avoid having balconies over walkways,
right, and
pedestrian areas. Is that something that you've looked at?
These set back. You'll see it in the plan. They set back a good deal. Yeah.
All right.
The only threatening people are the townhouses.
So again, we're talking about the signage. I mean, this is something that we'll be marketing. Think of this as sort of a holding thing, but this other sign would be along here. The height is very different between the two buildings. You know, maybe this is something that begs out to have, you know, sort of that sort of sign that's vertical, so there may be some other, yeah, you know, really interesting ways of looking at that. But we think it's a neat opportunity at that location of the building, just like it is here. I mean, I think it's a great location facing towards Speedway to do that.
So the big sunscreen structure, that's
not
flat?
It's a painted cementitious material that will be fastened, okay, where you can see the fasteners and things like that. Again, we're trying to keep this as really the way the building materials are used in a much edgier way, you know, so...
But the opposite side will be clad with the metal. You're saying the darker corrugated metal on
the other side. That's right, yes, that's correct. Yeah, so it has kind of a, it's like the lining of a glove, you know, the inside, the other side just has a different feel.
Is that lit in any way at night?
Well, we do have the dark sky requirements.
The thing up on the top.
Yeah, well, you know, the element at the top, there is a pool on top of the building, so that's an area that's kind of an outdoor area, so that kind of creates a little bit of a lid there. It would be great to be able to light this thing, but I know that there are the dark sky requirements that we have to satisfy there, so I'm not sure that I can answer that, how we would approach that yet. So as we... So really, we're on the street is where we're really spending a lot of effort to have this massing and a lot of these setbacks. And as we get around the other sides of the building, we want to carry on a lot of those materials. We do transition to some stucco materials, but the corrugated siding kind of continues also. As we're looking at this, one thing I want to point out.
Excuse me, what's in the foreground? Remind you, is that?
This is a parking lot right back here that there's a...
Small retail off of Speedway.
Yeah, okay.
So Speedway's right here.
Yeah. And the zoning, I was just looking at zoning up to get follow up with Jan's question. And you can build 56, you can't exceed 56 feet on the north side of this building, right on Speedway.
In the main game.
50 square feet right for the size.
Excuse me.
He's talking about the height of the building, right to the property.
Yeah. Tom and I were on the side talking about a blade sign, but still it worked, because 40 feet is as high as you can go in front of that building.
I think it's 56 right there, but then as you head further west, it goes down to 40.
Steps down. It's 40 along.
Is it just across? Is it just on the? It's just on the east side of Tyndall that you can go to 56. Okay. Yeah. So it's 40 on the west side of Tyndall. So it's 40 all along that.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
4 stories and 56 directly west. Directly north of us, and then there's 2 lots on the other side of the alley that can be 4 stories, not to exceed
that's
56.
Correct. Yeah.
And then there's one for that's 3 stories, not to exceed 40.
I was wrong on that. I used the alley as a street. Yeah, exactly. Right. What I said first is right, four stories, 56 feet.
It's on page 28.
Oh, it's four stories on one.
No, we're rendering. It shows the mass.
Right. Yeah.
28.
We do, yeah. We do. We'll hang out today. We show the heights of all the neighboring parcels around the plantations.
Right. Yeah, I just put it in context.
Right.
Yeah, that, those are maybe sometimes good things to see early. Biggest view, you know.
Right.
Is that parking behind the lower?
Within the base there? Of the building. This is there. This is the parking for the neighboring parcels.
I mean, behind that wall.
Yes.
That's why that's a solid wall like that.
Right.
Is that two levels? Or?
What level parking?
How high is the wall? I'm pretty lost.
16 feet.
That's all concrete. That's all the same. That same concrete, the toned concrete, or is that
around the base.
Stucco base?
Yeah, no, that would be. I wouldn't go too fast. So what we're proposing is that this would be the toned concrete around the back. And when we met with staff, Rick made a recommendation. He said, you know, you really should consider more articulation along some of these areas in the back. And I think we would definitely propose doing a bit more of that, because this is more than likely going to be as it is right now. So, you know, in the character of the building, and the one thing I very much like with what we did back here is that the way these two kind of the colors kind of interlock. So we have this playfulness with some of the corrugated siding that kind of transitions then to a dark stucco color that then transitions to a lighter stucco color. So I think that we should do play with a little bit more with some of the variation, but we do like the way that interlocks and kind of ties together. The other thing it does is it emphasizes the setbacks. We're proposing this, you know, setbacks in a similar manner to what we had next door. The only difference is here, just because of the character of the building, we'd like to keep the setbacks a little simpler instead of having to jog up as like a ziggurat. These are somewhat simpler setbacks, and it makes a lot of circulation, vertical circulation with stairs and things way, way easier for us to solve.
Well, really like the continuation of the setbacks. I think that's a very good thing.
Yeah,
and I also like, whether it's intentional or not, I like that you're transitioning down to more traditional kinds of forms,
right,
building forms, as you get closer to the storage areas. And then you've left the more contemporary materials and forms, you know, facing towards the campus. I think that's a nice response. That's something that I would aspire to do, is to keep this space and that element a little more traditional in its materials and form.
It's a little softer.
Good point.
Softer.
Yeah.
We were talking about the 15-foot alley before. One of the discussions we had with staff and one of the different departments were there was regarding loading. The loading really is just for garbage pickup. Very little else we'll take back, but our idea was to have it kind of set off sideways so a truck could back in sideways into it instead of pulling directly back, which would be a much more difficult maneuver. This is very simple for a truck to pull it back here. So trash would be walked out. The chute is up at the front of the building, but the trash would be walked out and brought back here for garbage pickups and things. Other, Lisa had mentioned about making sure that we make the meters easily accessible. Those will be provided back here. So we have mechanical spaces back here also, and they'll... there's not any direct access. There's not access to the garage from this. It's only off of Tindo. But there will be probably a couple of doors back here with access for utilities and things for mechanical equipment. So that's worth pointing out. But otherwise, that alley will only be used for garbage pickup as it is for all the other properties presently.
You mentioned handicap a little earlier. Did that relate to retail access or to residential access?
Well, really, it applies to both. I mean, where retail spaces are subject to ADA requirements, but there's FHA requirements for residential and accessibility requirements. They're different. They're actually, people call it ADA. They're really not when it comes to residential. But they're really, accessibility is really throughout the building.
These are really good comments and questions, but I'm going to ask that we allow Jeff to finish his presentation, and then we can have a discussion and then also allow the audience to make comment, if that's all right.
I could get a control tour.
Can you advance me on the projector?
I'm afraid to touch it, it'll get worse.
And just for reference, I'm clear now.
Okay. You're all hours, huh?
Now we're just backing up to the 9 o'clock parking garage.
Contain it to 9 o'clock.
So we're going to look at a little bit more articulation, in particular along the alley with the concrete elements here, but we think that there we could do a little bit more to make that a little bit more expressive. We've purposely created a separation between the existing building and as the residential claims appear. So there's a space between that's about 40 feet, and that would have terrace areas that would be enclosed terrace areas, as you see here. So they're closed in like they are the first phase. And then there would also be some landscaping, some buffer and separation landscaping. We've used, in this building, we've used kind of a gravel, a very nice color for a gravel that's, in and amongst some of the landscaping. We would probably do something similar to that here. And then in between the legs of the U, there are outdoor areas, accessible outdoor areas, similar to what we have in the first phase. Again, we would hold a buffer along the back of that just to keep the noise off of the alley.
Where's the pool?
The pool is up at the top of the building.
That 40-foot area is treated as like a buffer yard between buildings. It's
right.
Not a space. Now, the one over two buildings, it's not a space that people are going to be able to access.
That's right. This space will not be the active outdoor space. It will be in here, but it will not over here. We're creating separation just so it feels there's a comfortable distance between the two buildings.
It's not intended as such, but I'm sure there will be activity.